Harry Houdini, I've used this illustration in the past, but it fits so well this morning with this passage before us. He was 1874 to 1926. He's an illusionist, magician, escape artist. He actually was a master at escaping from handcuffs, straitjackets, and jails. That was kind of his little thing. And he was an absolute amazing showman. He truly, truly was. He had a rather sad death. He had an appendicitis that eventually took his life. But there's a story told that one time he met his match. And the sad part about it was a little jail that was in the British Isles. And they put Harry in there, and Harry, for over 2 hours, attempted to spring the lock on the jail door. And after 2 hours, he was finished, he was done, and in exhaustion, he leaned against the door, and the door swung open. It was never locked. And so he wasted 2 hours trying to unlock a door that was never locked. I kind of look at this passage before us this morning that Jacob and all of his weird schemings with these peeling off the bark and making striped pieces of wood and all the stuff that he has, all of that is absolutely unnecessary because God is going to prosper him. God is going to do the work. So in Genesis 27, we saw that Jacob is a schemer against his brother and even his father. In Genesis 29, we learned that Laban is a schemer of schemers by which he got Jacob an extra 7 years' work out of him. But now in Genesis 30, we see Jacob as a schemer of a schemer of a schemer. And we see this mixture of these two individuals, Laban and Jacob, and it's fun to watch two schemers. It's quite entertaining. It really is. I mean, these two guys are amazing. How they come up with all these creative ways to rip each other off. It is quite amazing to watch. And Jacob's interpretation of the prosperity when all is said and done in Genesis 31:9 is, "Thus God has taken away your father's livestock and he's given them to me." So he realizes after all of his scheming and all the stuff that he does, it was ultimately the Lord that prospered him. It was God. It really wasn't Jacob after all. Now, Jacob enrolled in the school of faith, and he's in this school for 20 years. In this school, God is attempting to get rid of the schemer, to get rid of the deceiver in Jacob. Proverbs 12:1 says, "To learn, you must love discipline. It is stupid to hate correction." So Jacob is being corrected. Now, we noted that we see two things in this chapter that we're looking at. We see that when it is God's will for procreation, we saw this in the part of chapter 29 into 30, that God absolutely prospered Jacob with 11 sons and one daughter. But now in verses 25 to 43, given to one another in prosperity and adversity, God now is going to bless Jacob. Jacob's been a faithful servant for 14 years, but he has nothing to show for it. So the Lord now is going to bless him. God had promised that he would bless him. Now, here's the thought of our passage this morning. The blessings of the Lord through prosperity is just that, a blessing of God's grace that is undeserved. Sometimes when I think when we find ourselves being blessed, we go, "Wow, God must think a lot about me," or "Wow, I must be a really good servant." And we often think those thoughts. Those are incorrect thoughts. It is absolutely the grace of God. It is God just being gracious to us. And God has promised that he is going to do this with Jacob. Now, here's how we're going to look at it. In verses 25 through 30, we have Jacob's provision. Jacob's provision. And then in verses 31 through 34, Jacob's wages. And then in verses 35 through 43, Jacob's prosperity. And boy, does God bless him. So let's pick it up now in chapter 30, verse 25, and let's talk about Jacob's provision. He has literally no provisions. So verse 25 says, "Now it came about that when Rachel had borne Joseph. Now, the context of this is that Jacob has just experienced what we call birth wars. We know that Jacob himself had gone to Laban's house, and it was a relative, his mother's uncle, and through that he fell in love at first sight for Rachel. So he told Laban, her father, that he would work 7 years for her, and so it was agreed on. So then the night of the wedding, they do a little switcheroo, and old Laban gives the older daughter to Jacob, and Jacob wakes up the next morning and he found out he married the wrong wife. Now that could ruin your day. It really did. And so he woke up, he says, "Oh, how could you do this to me?" And of course Laban goes, "Oh, I forgot to tell you, we don't marry out the younger before the older. We don't do that. So I'll tell you what, why don't you work another 7 years for me?" And so a total of 14 years, and you can have both Leah and Rachel as your wives. So along with that, each one of the wives had a maid. So they begin to have children. Leah does, and then Leah gives her maid to Jacob, and then Rachel gives her maid. So now Jacob has a total of 4 wives. The result is 11 sons and 1 daughter. Look at Genesis 30, verse 22. "Then God remembered Rachel, and God gave heed to her and opened her womb, and she conceived and bore a son. And she said, 'God has taken away my reproach,' and she named him Joseph." This is son number 11, saying, "May the Lord give me another son." Now, I don't know if she knew what she was saying, because in Genesis 35, verses 16 through 20, she will have yet another son, son number 12. His name is Benjamin, son of my right hand. And after giving birth, she dies. So I don't know if she really understood what she was saying when she requested yet another son. So that's the context of it. She's just given birth now to her 11th son. They have 1 daughter. So verse 26 says, "Give me my wives and my children for whom I have served you, and let me depart." Now, he's very clear about this. And when you're dealing with a crook like Laban, you got to be very exact in what you say. "Okay, I got my wives, and I've got my other wives that were maids. So I have a total of 4 wives, and I have my family now, 11 sons and 1 daughter. And so please give them to me so that I can depart." And then he adds, "For you yourself know my service, which I have rendered to you." Now, Jacob worked hard. Jacob has been an incredible servant to Laban. And notice he says, "You yourself know my service, which I have rendered to you." I like what Colossians says. Colossians 3:22, it says, "Slaves or employees, in all things obey those who are your masters or employers on earth, not with external service as those who merely please men, but with sincerity of heart, fearing the Lord. Whatever you do, do your work heartily as for the Lord rather than for man, knowing that from the Lord you will receive the reward of the inheritance. It is the Lord Christ whom you serve." Now, here's a great lesson. Jacob had to learn to be a servant. Every one of us here this morning that are born again, we are in the school of learning to be servants. Now, in our society is the opposite of this. Our whole mindset of our society is, what are you going to do for me? What do I get out of it? How will you take care of me? So it's a society of entitlement. And I think it's rather sad when that creeps into the church and we start literally church shopping for churches. You know, do they have a skateboard ministry? Do they have a women's shopping ministry where they go out and shop together? I mean, what kind of ministries do they have for me? So we're looking for people to minister to me. What's in it for me? But every one of us here should be in the school of servanthood, where we should be learning to serve. God has blessed us with gifts, abilities, and talents in which we can serve the Lord and His church. That's why we're here. And this is a brand new year, 2025. And there's some folks that have been here for many, many years, into the teens, and still not serving. We've got to adopt the biblical mindset. We've got to see ourselves as servants. We owe it all. The world doesn't owe us a thing. We owe our gratitude and thanks and service to the Lord and to this world of ours. And even Jesus himself in Matthew 23:11 says, "But the greatest among you shall be your servant." So this is one of the first things I gleaned from this unusual portion of scripture, that Jacob says, "Hey, Laban, look at me. Look what I've done. Look what I've rendered to you. Look how I have served you these 14 years. So in verses 27 through 30, we have Jacob's witness. Notice it says, "But Laban said to him, 'If now it pleases you, stay with me. I have divined that the Lord has blessed me on your account.'" So what he's basically saying is, "I don't want you to leave." You know the old expression, "Don't rock the boat." That's literally what he's saying. "I can't afford to lose you. All you've done has caused me to prosper. Everything you touch turns to gold. So I really don't want you to go. I want you to stay." Now, I want to call attention to a little phrase here, and this is quite interesting. I got to tell you, after reading this, my attitude towards Laban has really changed this week. Notice he says, "I have divined," notice he says, "that the Lord has blessed me on your account." That word "divine" literally means "I've learned by enchantment," or Laban had carried out some divination or practices of his own. He's consulted with a soothsayer, or he's seeking the secret of Jacob's blessings. So somehow, Laban here is admitting that he's dabbled in the occult. He's trying to figure out why he is so blessed, and where is this all this blessing of Jacob really coming from? And so this phrase means that he dabbles in the occult. Leviticus 19:26 says, "Nor practice divination or soothsaying." Deuteronomy 8:10 says, "There shall not be found among you anyone who makes his son or daughter pass through the fire, one who uses divination, one who practices witchcraft, or one who interprets omens, or a sorcerer." So what are we talking about in 2025, reading tea leaves, automatic writing, psychedelic drugs like mushrooms, where individuals take these and alter their consciousness so that they might know what the future holds, horoscopes, astrology, crystal gazing, Ouija boards. All of these things that I just mentioned to you are under the heading of the occult. And Christians are forbidden from messing around with this stuff. One of the places that's like one of the headquarters of this, it's a beautiful community. I think it's a beautiful place, but you know, down in Arizona, they have a lot of crystals that people get into down in Arizona, and you'll have these little shops where they'll sell these crystals. And one time I was in one of the shops, and this lady was showing this lady at the counter all of these crystals, and she goes, "Well, how do I know which one to buy?" She goes, "The crystals will tell you." And I'm going, "Woo!" Sedona, Arizona. What a bunch of kooks over there. They really are. I mean, they got these crystal things all over the place. This is a cult. Christians don't mess with astrology. Now, astronomy is different, but I said astrology. And, you know, your astrological chart and sign and all this. Now, I got to tell you, my attitude after seeing this, I never saw this before. My attitude towards Laban has really changed. I mean, I don't know if Laban knows the Lord or not. I know he knows about the Lord, but this guy's messing with the occult. I know one thing. If I met Laban, I will witness to him. That's what I would do. Because I'm not sure. Some people look at him as a backslider. That's how I've always kind of looked at him. But I don't know. This guy is dabbling with the occult. So notice what has been revealed to him, that the Lord, the covenant God, has blessed me on your account. So these blessings that Laban has been experiencing through Jacob go all the way back to the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, Genesis 21:22 and Genesis 26:28. You know, there's a lot of people like Laban. They want the blessings of the Lord, but they don't want the Lord. And I see this quite frequently. They like to hire Christians because they know the Christian will do a good job, but they don't want the prayer, they don't want the God, the scriptures, and all that other stuff. And one of the things that we experience here, and some of you are aware, some of you aren't, you know, we of course have our school here, and so in order for a child to enroll in our Christian school, the family needs to have a church. They need to be involved in a church. We periodically have to get a letter from the pastor acknowledging that this family or this person attends this church, they're involved in this church, and so that's one of the things. Why is this? Because you know what our main goal of our school is making disciples of Jesus. That's our goal. Academically, we're 2 to 3 years above public education. So we'll have people that will come and will say, well, you know, we don't go to church, but I've read about your school and we want to enroll in our school. I'm sorry, we're not going to be a good match. Because we want to make disciples of Jesus. We kind of look at, you know, the whole part of just the whole brainy aspect of it, growing in your thoughts and growing in skills and all that. We kind of put that off to the side. We want to see a disciple of Jesus. And if the parents aren't willing to put God first and to want their child to become a disciple of Jesus, then this school isn't going to work out. Because we put God first. We want the student to know Jesus, to walk with you. And we've also learned over the years that when these people kind of slip in and they're in the school, that when there's discipline problems, often it can be traced back to those that have no desire for the Lord, no desire to be discipled. And so that's what it is. So there's a lot of people like Laban. They like the benefits of Christianity. They like the blessings that come, but they don't really want the Lord. They don't really want Jesus. That's not really their deal. You know, they like the discipline of the school. They like it. You know, it's good school. The kids are learning. That's kind of what we want. We want the education part, but not the Christian education part. So look at verse 28. He continued, "Name me your wages, and I will give it to you." Now, doesn't that sound familiar? If you go back to chapter 29, we saw this before, and this is where, of course, Jacob got ripped off. Chapter 29, verse 15, "Then Laban said to Jacob, 'Because you are my relative, should you therefore serve me for nothing? Tell me, what shall your wages be?'" Now, just kind of a heads up, Laban is going to rip off Jacob 10 times with his wages. In chapter 31, verse 7, Jacob reminisces and thinks back over these 6 different years, and he realizes, man, he's ripped me off. He says, "Yet your father has cheated me and changed my wages 10 times. However, God did not allow him to hurt me." So Laban is a real crook. I mean, he really is. I mean, he's in it for number one, which is himself. That's what he's in it for. He could care less, even though Jacob is his son-in-law and he's married his daughters. He didn't care about that. All he cares about is the mighty dollar. That's all he cares about, and that's all he's concerned about. And so verse 29 says, "But he said to him, 'You yourself know how I have served you and how your cattle have fared with me.'" So he puts it back on Laban again. He says, "Now you yourself know how your cattle and your herds have been doing under my direction. You can testify to me how well things have been, how prosperous you have become. Again, I think of Ephesians 6, 7, with good will render service to the Lord and not to men, knowing that whatever good thing each one does, this he will receive back from the Lord, whether slave or free. And I really believe that Jacob was doing it for the Lord. He just realized that this is where God had him. He was in the school of faith. So I'm going to serve Laban. I'm going to do the very best I can do. I'm going to be a servant to him. So verse 30, he says, "For you had little before I came, and it has increased to a multitude, and the Lord has blessed you wherever I turn, but now when shall I provide for my household?" So he says, over these 14 years, when I started, you had very little. But since I have been with you, you have become a blessed man. And that's what he said. Now he's saying this to Laban. Laban can say, well, that's not true. But he's not saying that, because everything that Jacob is saying is absolute truth. Notice he says, "And the Lord has blessed you wherever I turn." So he acknowledges that it's been the Lord. Oh, I'm pretty good. I herded my father's flocks, but this is the Lord coming through me. All of these blessings are due to the Lord. He says, "But now, when shall I provide for my household also?" Now, I want you to notice what Jacob is saying here. Jacob is not saying, "I need God to prosper me. I need to become wealthy like you. I want to have a bunch of herds myself." He doesn't say any of that. What he's basically saying is, since I've been working for you, I don't have anything. All my energy, all my time, all my effort has been going into you being blessed. But now I've got four wives, I've got 11 sons, I got one daughter, and I literally have nothing. All the blessings have gone to you. I don't have anything by which I can support my family, is literally what he's saying. And I think, again, of 1 Timothy chapter 6, verses 7 through 10. "For we have brought nothing into this world, so we cannot take anything out of it either. If we have food and covering, with these we shall be content. But those who want to get rich fall into temptation and a snare and many foolish and harmful desires, which plunge men into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is the root of all sorts of evil, and some by longing for it have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many griefs." And I want to be clear about this. This is not Jacob. Now, God's going to bless Jacob. It's the Lord's doing, not his. But he's not even asking for it. I want you to note this. He's just basically saying, "I need to provide for my family. All I'm doing is providing for you. I need to make a break so that I can support my family." And I hope that that's the desire of every husband that is here. And some of you sisters that are the breadwinners of the home, I hope that that's in you too. That through the Lord, we need to provide for our families. We really need to do that. Timothy says, "If a man does not provide for his own, he's denied the faith and is worse than an unbeliever." So we should have that desire, not necessarily to be rich, not necessarily to be prosperous and all that. If God decides to do it, that's his business, but to provide for our families, to provide for our children, to provide for our grandchildren. All of that should be the desire that we have, as Jacob has here, which is rightfully so. Now, here's the great danger that Jacob finds himself in, that Jacob has become dependent or at the mercy of Laban. For 14 years, he has been serving Laban, and he has nothing to show for it except his wives and his children. He has nothing monetary by which he can say, "I can fall back on this or I can do this." Like Proverbs 22:7, "The rich rules over the poor and the borrower becomes the lender's slave." Boy, there's a lot of truth to that. You know, the devil's a poor paymaster. You know that? He really is. And after all of this, Laban has not been gracious in all these blessings to Jacob. It's all been kept to himself. He's not shared it with Jacob at all. And it's through Jacob that all these blessings have come. So this brings us now to verses 31 through 34, Jacob's wages. What shall Jacob desire? So verse 31 says, "So he said, 'What shall I give you?' And I love Jacob's response. You shall not give me anything. Now, why would Jacob say that? Because Jacob knows that if Laban gives him something, he'll never hear the end of it. For all of eternity, Jacob will be hearing that it was because of Laban that he has resources. I think back in Genesis 14:23, that after Abraham took his men and went in and rescued Lot and rescued the people from down in Sodom, that the king came to Sodom and he says, I'll tell you what, Abraham, you went down, you got this victory. I'm going to give you this. I'm going to take this. I'm going to give you this. And Abraham says, I won't take one thing from you because I don't want anyone saying in the future, I made Abraham great. He knew it was the Lord and he wanted God to get the glory, not himself or some other king. And let me just say this morning, there are some folks that want to help us, but I'll tell you, the price is too high. And I think this happens sometimes if you're a young couple, you've just been married and the parents want to loan you money, you better really think it through. Because that loan will cost you. It can be a constant reminder of when I loaned you this or I did this. And maybe some of our parents aren't necessarily like this, but it can be like this, and I have seen it like this. So that you say, I don't want to get anything from this person. I don't want to take anything from this person. Abraham says, I'm not even going to take a sandal from him. So I don't want him saying later on, oh, it was me. I did this. And oh, remember when I did this. Oh, remember when I did this over and over again. So he says, I don't want anything from you. And boy, there's a lot of wisdom there. Would have been easy to do that, but he says, no. He says, if you will do this one thing for me, I will again pasture and keep your flock. So now, and again, we don't see any prayer here, nothing like that. Jacob goes, okay, I'll tell you what, there is one thing that we can do in order to strike a bargain. I'm going to tell you what my wages are going to be. So notice verse 32. Let me pass through your entire flock today. Notice, who's going to do it? Jacob's going to do it. Jacob's going to pass through your entire flock today, removing from there every speckled, spotted sheep, every black one among the lambs, and the spotted and speckled among the goats, and such shall be my wages. So this very day, we can talk about this, but let's do this. If you'll accept what I'm going to say, I'm going to go through all your flocks today. I'm going to take out the spotted, the speckled, the dark ones. I'm taking them. Those are going to be my wages. As we'll see in just a moment, those were the inferior ones. So he mentions the speckled, the spotted, every black one among the lambs, and the spotted and speckled among the goats. Now, Eastern sheep were mostly solid white and rarely brown, and Eastern goats were predominantly black and rarely spotted and speckled. So I think that as he's saying this is one of those scenes I want to see the Blu-ray on. Look over at Laban's face and he's going, you are such a sucker. A sucker is born every minute. And here's one right here. I think Laban is going, are you serious? You want the inferior ones? You want the few? That's what you want? He's going, oh, I love this sucker. I just love this guy. I mean, he is just absolutely loving this. Now, Jacob would have to have faith because Jacob would hope that they would be spotted when they're born, but no one knows the color of what the animals will produce. We don't know that. Our children are like that. Every once in a while, you have this recessive gene where everybody in the house has dark eyes and all of a sudden this blue-eyed boy comes out. Where did that come from? We have no control over that. That's the Lord that arranges the genetics. We have nothing to say with that. But again, notice the wording, let me, this is Jacob, let me pass through your entire flock today, and such shall be my wages. Because I'll go through, I'll pull them out, and then we'll consider that my wages. So verse 33, so my honesty will answer for me later when you come concerning your wages, everyone that is not speckled or spotted among the goats, black among the lambs, if found with me will be considered stolen. So when you come back through to do inventory, when it comes time for me to go, and you see solid white, you see this and that, then you'll realize I've ripped you off. Because there'll be no gray area here. Either they're spotted or they're not. Either they're dark or they're not. There's no in between here. It's not like being sort of pregnant. I mean, you either are or aren't. I mean, there's nothing about that at all. So verse 34, Laban said, good. Let it be according to your word. So good, you take the speckled, you take the spotted, and you take the black among the lambs. And I'm sure Laban is smiling all the way away from that comrade. He's going, what a sucker Jacob is. This is like shooting fish in a barrel. This is so simple. So now in verses 35 through 43, we now have Jacob's prosperity. So verse 35, so he removed on that day the striped, the spotted, the male goats, and all the speckled and spotted female goats, every one with white in it, and all the black ones among the sheep, and gave them into the care of his sons. Now notice now here in verses 35 through 36, Laban separated the spotted, the speckled, and the black ones. That was not the agreement. If you go back to verse 32, here's the agreement in verse 32. Let me pass through your entire flock today, removing from there every speckled, spotted sheep, and so forth. But Laban can't help himself. He goes in and literally takes what was Jacob's. He promised he could have the speckled, the spotted, and the striped, and the dark ones. But he goes in and removes them from the flock. Now they're his. Well, you talk about making it hard. And look, he makes it more difficult. Look at verse 36. And he put a distance of 3 days' journey between himself and Jacob fed the rest of Laban. The Bible says he doesn't even respond. So there's no way that Jacob is going to be able to mate his spotted ones with the other ones. He's already taken them all. There's nothing for him to even make. So now what he's going to have to do is just allow the animals to reproduce, and then he can start pulling his little shenanigans is what he'll do. So again, this is absolutely dishonest from the very beginning. The deal has been struck, and Jacob the same day goes and breaks their agreement and takes all the spotted away from Jacob. As Henry M. Morris in his book Genesis Record says, since the solid colored animals were by far the more numerous, and since it was much less likely that they would bear striped or speckled offspring than these animals that were already striped and speckled or brown among the sheep, this arrangement clearly was highly favorable to Laban and very doubtful value to Jacob. Indeed, it was an act of pure faith on his part. He had to put himself entirely at God's mercy. It would be up to the Lord to indicate by a very unlikely set of circumstances whether Jacob should prosper personally or not. I mean, he literally was out. He now had none of the speckled, nothing in which to mate with. All he was left with is Jacob's flocks. He had nothing. He's been ripped off. So verse 37, here's Jacob. Then Jacob took fresh rods of poplar and almond and plane trees, and he peeled white stripes in them, exposing the white which was in the rods. So he takes the bark off of these twigs, these branches, and he has all of these mixed colors, white, brown, white, brown, white, brown, all in a row is what he does. Now, this is interesting. The word poplar and the term white, they're puns on the name Laban. And you say, well, why do you say it? Because the name Laban means white. So literally what Jacob is saying is, I'll give Laban some of his own medicine. Mr. White will meet my white, is what he's saying. You want to play with me? You want to rip me off? Then I'm going to do this. I'm going to bring the white out. I'm going to peel the bark off. I'm going to create the stripes themselves is literally what I'm going to do. And I'm going to use it against you. Verse 38. And he set the rods, which he had peeled in front of the flocks, in the gutters, even the watering troughs where the flocks came to drink, and they mated when they came to drink. So the flocks mated by the rods, and the flocks brought forth striped, speckled, and spotted. Now, only Jacob could come up with something like this. I mean, this is Jacob. This is classic trickster, supplanter, ripoff. This is classic, classic Jacob. Now, how in the world could peeling the bark off, making striped pieces of branches right in front of the watering troughs, how could that in and of itself cause the animals that mated to bring forth striped animals? Only Jacob could come up with something like this. You know, the funny thing about it is God actually used it. That's the weird thing about it. God actually prospered him, and it was God who was at work. Now, I believe this is almost like the mandrakes that we looked at last week. That was that fruit that was found in the field that they believed that would make women fertile. So a lot of people put a lot of stock in the fact that if you had mandrakes, you could get pregnant. Well, it was all superstitious, and it didn't work out. So this is superstitious stuff. And the Bible is not encouraging us to do it. It's simply recording what Jacob did. So it's simply saying, this is what he did. Now, God himself controls the genetic structure of animals and the spotted, the stripes. And so it is God and God alone that will increase Jacob in the area of prosperity. It is the Lord. He can do all of his little manipulations. He can do all the, just like he lied to his father and he ripped off his brother. God was going to have his will accomplished. So in verses 40 through 42, we now have selective breeding. And this is one of the first times we see this. This is quite interesting what Jacob does do. Verse 40, and Jacob separated the lambs and made the flocks face towards the striped and all the black in the flock of Laban. And he put his own herd apart and did not put them with Laban's flock. So he's separating the flocks. Though he's over them, he's making the separation between Laban's flocks and his. Verse 41, moreover, whenever the stronger of the flock were mating, Jacob would place the rods in the sight of the flock in the gutters so that they might mate by the rods. Now, this again is selective breeding. He's taking the stronger ones. He's putting together the stronger ones. And again, he's putting these stripes in front of them. It was kind of funny this week. I was reading various, you know, commentators, and some were saying, well, the poplar, the stems of the branches were in the water, and there was something inside of them that were producing the stripes. I don't know how they come up with this stuff, but I think they're drinking too many espressos or something. I don't know what they're doing. But they said, well, it could be this way, you know. Well, as they were seeing the stripes subliminally, it caused them, their genetics, to cause the stripes to come forth. And we come up with all this weird stuff. It's ridiculous. There's nothing to it. There's no basis for it at all. But what he's doing here does. You're getting the strong ones. Those are the ones you want. You don't want the weak ones. And notice what happens in verse 42. But when the flock was feeble, he did not put them in. So the feebler were Laban's and the stronger were Jacob's. Now, again, this is selective breeding. You want the strong mating with the strong, not the strong with the feeble. And really what he did here was kind of sad what he did, but it still worked. But what he did was he goes, the strong ones are mine, the weak ones are yours. So he now is giving his full attention to the stronger ones, which are ultimately his. Now, this is interesting. God gave instructions to Jacob in a dream about striped, speckled, and mottled. Turn over to chapter 31, verse 10. I want you to see this. This is unusual. I believe that Jacob is doing this because God gave him a vision. Check this out. Genesis 31:10. And it came about at the time when the flocks were mating that I lifted up my eyes and I saw in a dream, and behold, the male goats which were mating were striped, speckled, and mottled. Then the angel of God said to me in the dream, Jacob, and I said, here I am. He said, lift up now your eyes and see that all the male goats which are mating are striped, speckled, and mottled, for I have seen all that Jacob has been doing to you. I am the God of Bethel, where you anointed a pillar, where you made a vow to me. Now arise and leave this land and return to the land of your birth. So God here gave him a vision. This vision of taking the spotted and the striped and the mottled, taking these inferior ones, the ones that were less, God showed him in a dream. And Jacob, in obedience, says, that's what I want for my wages, because God had showed him this. But this was purely Jacob peeling the bark off, putting them in the watering troughs. That was all Jacob, purely Jacob. But it still was faith in what God had shown him. And there was faith there, but a little bit of Jacob will help God out. There's a little bit of Jacob in there. So verse 43, the divine intervention. So verse 43 says, so the man became exceedingly prosperous and had large flocks. Now, exceedingly means over the top. So now Jacob is growing. His flocks are multiplying. And they're the good, strong ones. Though they're colored and spotted and dark colored, they're still all of Jacob's. And they're the strong ones. And God is absolutely blessing him. Now, God's blessing upon Jacob was at Bethel. If you go back to chapter 28, God had promised this to Jacob. And I think, again, Jacob was remembering God's promise to him in Genesis 28, 13. When he was converted to God, he had an encounter with God. God had told Jacob, I'm going to bless you. So 28, 13, and behold, the Lord stood above it and said, I am the Lord, the God of your father Abraham, the God of Isaac, the land on which you lie. I will give it to you and to your descendants. Your descendants will be also like the dust of the earth, and you will spread out to the west, to the east, to the north, to the south. And in you and in your descendants shall all the families of the earth be blessed. Behold, I am with you. I will keep you wherever you go. I will bring you back to this land, for I will not leave you until I have done what I have promised you. So part of it, again, is God's promise to Jacob. God said, I am going to bless you. You don't have anything, but that's okay. I am going to bless you. I'm going to bring you back. You're going to prosper. You're going to multiply. This is my promise to you. Notice also, not only were his flocks multiplying, but his male and female servants. Now, Jacob's flocks grew to such an extent that now Jacob has to purchase servants or slaves. He has to purchase. He cannot handle all the flocks that he has. And then notice the camels. Now, this is interesting. Some of the historians struggle with this, and they say, well, you know, camels weren't really used until later on. Want to bet? He has them here, and on with that, we noticed over 100 years earlier, Abraham was multiplying camels. So, yeah, you can go by what man says, or you can go by what God says. You know, that's our prerogative. But here God makes mention of the fact that Abraham had multiplied camels, and now we see that his grandson was doing the exact same thing. And then, of course, donkeys were prized for riding. They were basically the BMWs of the of this period. They were the smooth riders, and also the camels were great distance. Notice that Jacob also acknowledged the blessing and protection was all due to God. Turn back now to chapter 31, verse 6, and notice this is, we'll look at this next time, but this is his testimony of how God himself had brought the blessings and God had brought the protection. It says in Genesis 31:6, you know that I have served your father with all of my strength, yet your father has cheated me and has changed my wages 10 times. Moreover, God did not allow him to hurt me. Notice that. Verse 8, if he spoke thus, the speckled shall be your wages. Then all the flock brought forth speckled, If he spoke thus, the stripes shall be your wages. Then all the flocks brought forth stripe. Verse 9, thus God has taken away your father's livestock and given them to me. So God judged Laban. And that's the point of verse 9 here of chapter 31. God took all the wealth of Laban and gave it to Jacob. God was disciplining him for his treatment of Jacob. So Jacob's a man that had nothing that has become prosperous all through the hand of God. In Genesis 32:10, I am unworthy of all the loving kindness, of all the faithfulness which you have shown to your servant. For with my staff only I crossed this Jordan, and now I have become two companies. Can you imagine this? All he said, when I left my dad, all I had was a staff. And look what the Lord has done. James 1:17 says, every good thing given, every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shifting shadow. I'm going to close this morning with three applications, three things that I want us to look at that were in our passage. Number one, like Jacob, believers should strive to be servants of God, doing our service as unto the Lord. Colossians 3:23, whatever you do, do your work heartily as for the Lord rather than for men. That's good for all of us this morning. I hope that that becomes our life. I hope it does. We are serving God, not man. We are doing it for the Lord, not for man. Number two, Jacob gave the glory to God for the increase that came during his 14 years of service to Laban. The believer's increase, prosperity, is due to God's gracious, unearned favor. It's not us. It's not peeling the bark off the poplars and putting it next to them. That's not it. It was God who graciously blessed Jacob. And then lastly, number three, Jacob attempted through his own schemes to bring an increase to his flocks, but the increase came through the Lord. Genesis 31:9, thus God has taken away your father's livestock and given them to me. So Jacob realized that all of his scheming, all that he did, it didn't mean anything. It was God who brought the increase. It was God that blessed him. Let me ask you this morning. You look at your life and you see the blessings of life. What is that due to? Is that due to yourself? Or is that due to the grace of God? That God has graciously blessed your life. Let me ask you this. Is a relationship with God is what we can get out of it? Because that's what Laban was into. He loved the God of Jacob because it prospered him, but he didn't want the God of Jacob. I hope this morning we want the God of Jacob. I hope that that's what we want. We don't want just his blessings. We want him.